to Innovation Alberta, a celebration of science, research, and the inventive spirit. I'm Cheryl Crocher. As spring approaches and Alberta's rivers and lakes begin to clear, the thoughts of many people turn to fishing. But quality fishing depends on good habitat and clean water. Dr. Alice Hontella holds the Canada Research Chair in Ecotoxicology at the University of Lethbridge. She's studying the impact drugs, pesticides, and other pollutants have on the endocrine systems of fish. And over on the eastern slopes, biologist Jim Berdula is involved in a very successful and long-term fencing project that keeps cattle out of streams. That's so fish can successfully reproduce and live. These stories coming up in the next half hour on Innovation Alberta. Aquatic researcher Dr. Alice Hontella recently moved to Lethbridge to take up the new Canada Research Chair in Ecotoxicology. Her expertise in the impact of pollution on the health of fish and other organisms will be a great addition to the water research that's concentrating in southern Alberta. There's the Water Institute for Semi-Arid Ecosystems, and the new Alberta Ingenuity Centre for Water Research will be headquartered in Lethbridge as well. Despite the annual droughts, problems associated with feedlots and irrigation agriculture will give Alice plenty of opportunities for her research.
I have been in Quebec till recently, and in Quebec, the kind of work that I have done were basically on two big topics. One was the effects of metals. There's a lot of mining going on in Quebec, especially northern Quebec. Around Rouyn-Noranda, there is a big smelter. And the smelter releases metals such as cadmium, copper, zinc into the lakes through atmospheric deposition. And by studying yellow perch in the lakes of northern Quebec, we have found out that these fish had physiological problems, problems with growth, reproductive fitness, various hormonal problems that could be linked directly to the effects, to the presence of the metals in either water or in the food that the fish were eating. So these kind of studies were important to show that even low-level contamination by metals actually does have effects on fish health. The fish were not necessarily dead, but they were not as fit as they could be. The other kind of studies that I have done concern pesticides. And around Quebec, there are areas where there's very intensive agriculture, and pesticides are used very extensively. And of course, during the periods of application in early summer and also during rain events, there are a lot of pesticides in the water, and the fish and other animals are exposed to it. And so in the Yamaska River, which is the place where we worked, again, fish had problems with reproduction, growth. There was a very large evidence for oxidative stress, which is sort of a cellular damage that you can detect. And again, it was linked to the presence of various agricultural chemicals. Now, agriculture is a big topic in southern Alberta. We have a lot of ranching, there are feedlots, there are crops, and these kind of industries may release chemicals into the aquatic systems that may impact fish and possibly humans. And it is important to address these issues and do field studies that can characterize the health of these various animal species. And also, what is important is to provide a mechanistic understanding of the effects. So in my research, we do a lot of field work, but we also do lab exposures or lab work where we, under controlled conditions, try to really identify the cause-effect relationships. It's a very difficult thing to do in the environment where many things go on at the same time. And by using the field approach with the lab approach and even an in vitro approach where we actually isolate cells and expose them to a chemical and then study the cellular responses, then you provide data that's solid and that makes the link between the presence of the contaminant and a particular effect in the animal.
What is your specific area of interest in your research?
Yes, I'm interested in the effects of pollutants on the endocrine system of fish, on their capacity to synthesize and secrete hormones that are necessary for normal growth, reproduction, osmoregulation. And hormones are fascinating molecules because they are acting, they are efficient at very, very low concentrations in the blood. And if there is a change in the levels of hormones, it does have an enormous impact on the health of the fish. And just as an example, you know, a person who suffers from hypo or hyperthyroidism, they have very different clinical manifestations of the disease, and yet the difference in the plasma levels, blood levels of the hormones is very small. So the endocrine system of fish is very sensitive and vulnerable to pollutants, and I'm interested in one particular set of hormones which are called corticosteroid hormones, and the main one is cortisol. And these hormones are necessary to enable the fish to generate the normal physiological stress response, which help the fish to deal with stressors of various kinds. These stressors can be physical, confinement, can be presence of a predator, escape from a predator. And I have found in my previous studies that some pollutants, specifically metals and some pesticides, actually interfere with the normal synthesis of these corticosteroid hormones. So we get fish, if they're exposed to pollutants of high enough concentration in the field, that are unable to generate the normal stress response. So they are unable to deal with the normal natural stressors. And so we get fish that are sort of dulled in their reaction to stressors, and that has effects on the way they behave, on the way they interact. So this is what I study. I do field work when I actually sample fish, and I impose sort of standardized stress protocols onto the fish to determine how well they are able to handle stressors. And I can also do that in the lab under controlled conditions.
How do you stress a fish?
You can stress a fish either physically by confining it for a very short period in a smaller space, or by simply handling it for a given period of time. And you can also stress the fish by using a hormone, it's called ACTH, the adrenocorticotropic hormone, that normally will activate the secretion of the corticosteroid, such as cortisol. And so we have actually done some studies where we would go in the field and to a reference and a contaminated site and inject the fish with a controlled dose of ACTH and then measure the response to this ACTH in the blood. And we have found that the fish from the polluted environments, polluted sites, had a much lower ability to respond to the ACTH. And we were using ACTH as a sort of a standard stressor, as a mimic of a stressful situation that the fish could encounter in its environment.
Just talking about those chemicals, the cortisol and the ACTH, those are exactly the same sort of things that come out when they're talking about stress response in humans.
Yes, that's. I think that's where the similarity of the endocrine system of fish and other animals, including humans, makes this kind of research very interesting, because if we find a serious problem in the secretory pathway leading to corticosteroids such as cortisol, it is highly likely that similar problems may be happening in other animals, other species, possibly including humans. So fish can be used as a surrogate, you know, for other species. And whatever we find in the fish may have implications for other groups of animals. So the cellular similarity, the fact that the endocrine cell that secretes the hormone is so similar, the enzymatic apparatus of these cells is very similar between animals, makes, I think, our work very relevant to even humans.
You're here now because of a Canada Research Chair And also you'll be doing some work with WISE, the Water Institute for Semi-Arid Ecosystems. And then also there's the new Alberta Ingenuity Water Research Institute that's coming along. Do you have anything on the go right now that will apply to these areas?
Well, these initiatives that you mentioned, the Canada Research Chair, the Alberta Water Program, and the Alberta Ingenuity, I mean, those are very exciting opportunities because they provide the resources that are necessary to do research research work. I'm very interested in the question of pharmaceuticals. So those are chemicals that are released into water from either animal use or humans. It's a big question these days. It's becoming a very important topic, and we don't know much about it. We don't even know what really is in the water. There has been some surveys done, and I'm very impatient to find out what actually is in the water. So pharmaceuticals is one big area that I am going to study. Another one is metals such as selenium that may be released from the water table, and it's associated to extensive irrigation activities. So those are the two areas that I will work on. I will do work in the field by going to specific sites, using reference sites that may be cleaner, so then you can do some, you know, compare the various parameters that you measure. And I will always do lab work, lab exposures under controlled conditions to try to really pinpoint the cause-effect relationships.
When these contaminants get into the water, how is it that they move up through the food chain? They affect the fish, and then will they eventually get into humans? What's the mechanism that makes all of that happen?
Well, some of the contaminants may be degraded, and they may be actually broken down into very non-toxic ingredients. And we hope that that's what happens a lot of times. Unfortunately, sometimes the pollutants may bioaccumulate and they may be transferred from water, sediment, up the food chain to invertebrates. Fish may eat the invertebrates and they eventually may accumulate sufficient loads of these various contaminants to actually have adverse effects. If people eat the fish, they may also have problems. And, of course, there is the whole question of drinking water. You know, we drink the water. So when we see fish that may be having problems with their physiology, their hormonal status, I mean, we must ask ourselves, well, what happens to us when we drink that water every day? And our water treatment facilities are not necessarily set up to deal with that incredible variety of chemicals that may be present in the water. Now, sometimes we may say, well, the levels are very low and they may not be toxic. Now, low levels, at given every day, several times a day maybe, may actually have effects. So they are experimental procedures, they are experimental designs that we can use to address these kind of very complex questions. And we need to work with other researchers that provide additional expertise. So I always work with chemists, I work with ecologists, I work with geographers that actually provide, you know, information that help me interpret the data that I may get from the fish. And that's where institutes like WISE or the Alberta Ingenuity Water Research Center are excellent for addressing these kind of big questions. You cannot work on these kind of questions alone because it is a multidisciplinary kind of problem and it takes multidisciplinary expertise and approaches to solve the problems, to understand them.
One of the concerns here, too, is not even so much that we're polluting the water we do have, but we're losing the water we have because of problems with global warming and industrial uses of water. Is there a sense of, then, if we're having a depleting resource, that the concentration of these contaminants will make things even worse?
There's no doubt that southern Alberta is a very vulnerable region. It is a semi-arid region. We do have water shortages. Climate change with the droughts that we've been having create a situation where we actually have less water if the use of pesticides and other chemicals remains the same or maybe is even increased because there is more pressures for economic development and growth, and there always is, we may actually achieve concentrations of these pollutants that are pretty high. And I think we do have to keep an eye on that and do studies to actually assess the state of our aquatic ecosystems. And we have to also think about the future, you know, ensure that if we want to maintain our economy in this region, we have to make sure that the water is good enough for all the uses that we want to make of it. And those are very complicated questions, and we need good science, good solid science to answer these questions. We don't want to get into a situation where we have hysteria, biased opinions, one way or another way. We need solid science to really determine what's happening and what can be predicted for the future.
When will you be heading out into the field?
In April, for sure. Yeah. And probably I'll be working on the irrigation canals in the area here, some of the little ponds, and I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you very much, Alice.
Thank you.
That was Dr. Alice Hontella, who holds the new Canada Research Chair in Ecotoxicology at the University of Lethbridge. Back in the 1970s, biologists with Alberta Fish and Wildlife, as it was known at the time, initiated a fencing program on the North Raven River. The idea was to keep cattle out of what was once one of the prime trout streams on the eastern slopes. A novel idea at the time, it turned out to be an incredibly effective program to protect and restore riparian habitat. Jim Berdula is the habitat biologist who now manages the program for the Alberta Conservation Association in Rocky Mountain House.
It was noticed in the 1960s that fisheries biologists had gone out and noticed that due to land clearing and settlement in the area and agricultural uses, that the North Raven River was slowly starting to degrade, and as a result, fish populations were declining, and stream banks were becoming eroded and causing additional siltation.
Can you tell me a little bit about what the land around the North Raven is like? Whereabouts is it situated?
The North Raven River is situated approximately 40 kilometers southeast of Rocky Mountain House, or 65 kilometers west of Red Deer, Alberta. The main activity upon the land is agricultural, mainly cattle.
What happens when the cattle are around the river?
The cattle cause trampling of the vegetation along the riverbanks. And when that vegetation is removed, it causes the stream to become widened. And unstable banks increase the sedimentation, which enters into the stream.
What effect does that have on the fish?
Increased sedimentation and removal of the vegetative cover results in the creek becoming warmer in temperature, and we lose a lot of sensitive spawning habitat because trout require clean, cool waters, and the spawning habitat needs to be clear of silt, as that will choke out a lot of the eggs.
Is it mainly trout, or what types of trout are in this stream?
It's a trout stream. It's Alberta renowned. It has been in some international trout magazines as well. And it mainly consists of brown trout and brook trout, which were introduced in the 1940s.
So at the time when this project started, was anybody doing anything like this at the time?
To my knowledge, this is one of the first programs of this nature in Western Canada. And to date, it's been one of the most successful habitat stream rehabilitation programs.
So what exactly did they do at the time?
Landowners were approached by Fish and Wildlife. Fish and Wildlife had felt it was best to create exclusion fencing along the riparian corridors. And exclusion fencing keeps cattle off of the creek beds. And it was felt that most of the creek would come back, would rehabilitate itself naturally. And to date, we've seen excellent rehabilitation of the creek in areas that have been fenced.
How far were the fences away from the river, from the stream bank?
They vary on each property. Fence location was agreed upon by landowners, and some were willing to allow a little bit more of a buffer, and more were adamant about having the stream bank fence right next to the creek. And we're finding that those are the most expensive to maintain because they're more prone to frost heaving and getting wrecked by the creek itself in times of high water flows.
So you do have to go out there and replace fencing sometimes?
Yes, on some of the agreements it was agreed upon that fence maintenance was part of the agreement, and that is one of the most costly factors of this program.
So you've said that this has been going now since the mid-1970s, and it was one of the first and also one of the most successful programs. What are the successes? What have you found over the years? I see you've got a number of reports here.
Certain studies have been done, and they've shown that in areas where the creek has been fenced off, that fish numbers have increased greatly, as well as biomass. We've seen an increase in the actual mass of fish in the area of creek. Other measurements have been taken on habitat, and we've seen areas where the creek, due to having that vegetation along the banks again, has become a lot more stable, and as a result it's narrowed and deepened, providing a cooler habitat for fish to live in. And with that narrowing of the creek channel, it causes the velocity to speed up, so it keeps a lot of those areas, the gravel spawning areas, cleaner.
So it's made quite a difference. Just looking at the picture of this report from 1995, which gives you 20 years of assessment, it's amazing because you can see the farmland coming up to where the fences are. Of course, there's a straight line. And then around where the stream goes through, it's like a little forest there. Has that come back on its own?
Yes, a lot of the areas have rehabilitated, reestablished themselves naturally, and willow is one of the main plants or shrubs that grow in the area, and they do respond quite quickly, especially in these damper areas next to creeks.
Has this had any benefits for animals other than fish?
Yes, we've seen a large number of large mammals and songbirds in the summertime, as well as smaller mammals.
This fencing project to keep livestock out of the North Raven River, this is something that the Alberta Conservation Association has inherited from Fish and Wildlife. Where are you going to take this now?
We're going to remain providing maintenance and inspection of the fences that we currently have agreements with, due to the fact that maintenance is increased, maintenance costs are increasing. It really limits us on expanding the program further into other areas. So we're looking at working more with watershed groups at this time, such as the Rocky Riparian Group, and trying to get out the message to producers in the area that riparian areas are important habitat. And even though there is no figures that we have, I would almost guarantee that some of these areas that have been reclaimed do increase the property value of the areas, because you now have a lush riparian area flowing through land.
One of the things you've also done is purchased some land in order to reclaim it. What's involved in that?
The ACA, along with Trout Unlimited Canada and the Alberta Fish and Game Association, has purchased two properties along the North Raven River. One property is located at the headsprings of the North Raven River, and there's another springs area located on the Stainbrook property, which is lower downstream, about a mile down. We've worked with other groups such as the Junior Forest Wardens and the Junior Forest Rangers and the Rocky Riparian Group to try and speed up the reclamation of these lands by additional tree plantings. These lands were showcased in the Rocky Riparian Group's West Country Ag Tour last fall, and it showcased the sensitive areas that are found among areas that people are living in, just to bring it to attention that there are such sensitive areas that need special attention.
So what would you say is the bottom line then on cattle, water, and fish?
I think that they can be managed. If they're managed properly, they can get along. Exclusion fencing seems to be the most effective way to ensure the restoration of creeks or ensure the protection of creeks. And there's been many innovative new technologies out there right now for watering systems, such as solar watering units that are off-channel, where an exclusion fence can be created and cattle still can water near the creek but not directly on the creek. And I would like to think that they provide increased water quality to the areas as well as ensure the protection of the creeks in the area.
What are you going to be doing this spring?
Right now, we are just going to be continuing with the current projects that we have. We might look at expanding one or two projects or working with a landowner to provide assistance on a priority creek that has fisheries potential, or there is a potential to increase the fisheries on that property. And some of the priority creeks that we have in this area would be the North Raven River, Clear Creek, Alfred Creek. I do have a list of creeks in the area that we worked with Fish and Wildlife to determine high priority sites. And if a new project should come up on one of those creeks, we would definitely try and get involved as much as we could.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
That was Jim Berdula, a habitat biologist with the Alberta Conservation Association in Rocky Mountain House. That brings Innovation Alberta to a close for this week. The interviews you heard during this program are posted as audio files and as written transcripts on our website at innovationalberta.com. And you can keep up to date on technology and research events by subscribing to our weekly newsletter, Innovation Alberta Online. Innovation Alberta is sponsored by the University of Lethbridge, the Alberta Conservation Association, ICOR, the Informatics Circle of Research Excellence, the Alberta Research Council, Alberta Heritage Foundation for Medical Research, the Capital Region Innovation Center, the National Institute for Nanotechnology, Alberta Pacific Forest Industries, Japan Canada Oil Sands Limited, the Sustainable Forest Management Network, and Alberta Ingenuity. Innovation Alberta is mixed at Riverdale Recorders and is a Porcupine Stone production. I'm Cheryl Croucher.